Hello, I'm Stephen Goodwin. It's Tuesday, the 22nd of April, 2008, and welcome to episode number 21 of The Beer Crate, the podcast for ale lovers the world over. Each week, we'll be looking at the world of beer and brewing, investigating local, national, and international breweries, and of course, tasting a wide selection of beers, ales, and ciders. Lager boys need not apply. Coming up on today's show, we have news, the Drinker's Diary, coverage of the Drink Aware campaign, the second part of our interview with Rudolf de Lorcosuaren, quick tastings, and our world-famous Try Before You Die. So let's get cracking. News. And a study by Green King indicates that men develop beer loyalty by the grand old age of 35 and have had a previous 7 different favourites. They also noted the effect of peer pressure, with it being more prominent in younger drinkers and Londoners. There was no mention on whether the reviews we do on this show were considered as peer pressure. Marston's are continuing their spending spree by buying Refresh UK, owners of the Wychwood Brewery. This follows their previous buys of Jennings in 2005 and Ringwood in 2007. The MD of Marston's, Alastair Darby, says that they look to develop the brand. So if he's true to his word, the beer won't disappear in the near future, which is good news since other breweries of late haven't been so lucky. Drinker's Diary. And now is the time for the Reading Beer and Cider Festival. This is one of the big ones and definitely worth getting along if you can. It takes place at King's Meadow, Napier Road, and runs from the 1st of May to the 4th of May. If you can't make Reading, there's still the East Anglia Beer Festival running from the 23rd to the 26th of April, the 32nd Farnham Beer Exhibition from the 24th to the 26th, and Chippenham Beer Festival, which takes place on the 25th at the end of the week. Details for all of these can be found on last week's show or in the show notes. Drink Aware is a UK programme of activities created by the Drink Aware Trust to encourage responsible drinking. The campaign targets the general public and specific groups within it, such as teenagers, to try and reduce alcohol misuse and minimise alcohol-related harm. It does this through the support of the industry, retailers and government, who add the Enjoy Responsibly tagline to adverts and promotions, along with the drinkaware.co.uk website. This is a site that provides a wealth of information such as the effects of alcohol, a units calculator and a drinks diary. This is something that lets you keep track of your drinks over a prolonged period. Most ale drinkers do this anyway with pencil and paper, noting the tastes, aromas and ABV of each beer for future reference, but it's something the general populace, or those that drink primarily lagers, will be unaccustomed to. In fact, real ale and cider drinkers will be disappointed by the lack of decent options provided by the calculator and the monosyllabic approach taken with beer. That said, it's not really aimed at ale drinkers. DrinkAware also claims to contribute to policy development, although it's not unique in doing this and tries to avoid duplication of other resources in the UK. The Trust also engages in market research, providing aid for local and national initiatives and has a set of objectives. I shall quote thus. Overall, the aim of our work is to increase awareness of why and how to drink safely and responsibly, and the impact of alcohol misuse on society and on the health and well-being of individuals, their families and communities. Number 2. To improve attitudes towards motivation and personal responsibility to drink safely and responsibly, and the unacceptability of binge drinking and drink-related disorder. And 3. To affect positive changes in behaviour related to alcohol consumption. This makes it a generally passive campaign, primarily through the website, which I suggest you visit if you want to learn more. That is at drinkaware.co.uk, and as always, there's a link in the show notes. We now continue with the second part of our exclusive interview with the ever-excitable Rudolf de Lorcosuaren, head of the Brewers of Europe. So concerning the relationship between the big brewers and the microbrewers, can they both survive in the market?
Is the global brewers going to kill all the beer? And I always got that question. Now we have seen the merger more or less on the way between Scottish and Newcastle. That was the fifth major brewers in Europe. It's the only one who was the British roots brewer. It's going to disappear. What is going to be the next one? And my answer to that, I think, now there is in Europe 4 major brewers. There is room maybe for others which are not European brewers. But I believe that even though we have seen larger globalization of the beer market, we'll see more and more, as I tell you, in many countries, creation of new family, small local brewers in many countries. I give you the numbers about France. I could give you the numbers about Denmark. Denmark got less than 20 members 3 years ago. They've got more than 90 members nowadays in the association. That means people pay a fee. That means it's not really a microbrewery. It's a small producing center, but it's not a microbrewery who just produces for the coffee. They're producing for the village or two or three other villages. That's the case in Poland. That's the case in the Czech Republic. I think it's also the case in Belgium. As I said before, it's the case in France. Then there is a great dynamism of creation of brewers, family brewers, and local brewers in Europe. That means it works well for the big brewers, it works well for the small brewers. But of course, there is always brewers who are creating, always brewers which are dying. Just to give you maybe a story, which is a sad story, in this country, 108 years ago, that's a long time for you, not so long for me, sadly, but there were 3,200 brewers. In my old village, on the west part of the country, there were two brewers. One belonging to a farm, because at the time it was a good way to reward the hard-working farmers with good beer made in the farm. Another one which was more commercial for the village. That means from 3,200 now, they have more or less 120 brewers. You see? I'm not talking about micro brewers. But anyway, that means that change in the brewing sectors, like in every sector, even more a sector that exists for years and years, change happened. But beer is a rich European country and will continue to be that.
So do you never worry that some very nice beers but smaller breweries will disappear?
I think if the beer is very, very nice, if the beer is small, I think if the beer is nice, people will ask it, will ask for it, will drink it, and there is no way it will disappear. I think those who disappear are those who maybe did not create enough innovation or new taste. I think if you got one single beer and you see that it's difficult to manage and to be profitable one beer, if you are creative enough to create two or three different tastes, you will be very successful. It's just a question of dynamism and business-minded.
So you say that breweries have been disappearing over the last 100 years or so. The Brewers of Europe is 50 years old sometime soon, isn't it?
That's this year. 50 years. What does it mean, 50 years? It's not a very long story for an industry. Our slogan is 5,000 years, 50 years, and one next for the next 50 years. And I think 50 years at the European Union means that we have been very proactive. Indeed. Why? Because it was the year when the European Union was created. Then six countries, the six member countries who started the European Union, said, but beer should be part of the European Union. Europe is going to be an idea, it's going to be something, we cannot get out, we have to be in it. And they started 50 years ago. Then at the end of May, we are going to get a big party here. I hope you will come. I invite you. Yeah. And we will get a lot of our guests coming and have a feast for the 50th anniversary of our brewers. 50th anniversary is a gold color. What is the color of our beer? It's gold. Beer is the best product in the world. I'm not the only one to say. Many people have said it before, but I say it each time I can say it. I will say it again. Beer is the best product in the world.
Is it going to be a good party?
I think it's going to be a very exciting event because all the ingredients are good. It's a good product. People are happy. You can drink when you are young. You can drink when you are old. Of course, not the underage. Of course, that's a message. Very important to say it, depending on the country. But it's going to be a very fun event.
So what's happening over the next 50 years?
I think it will very much depend on us. We are able really to put an equilibrium between those great majorities of people who drink our beer, which is even good for the health if they're drinking in the way where most of the people drink, and those people who abuse. We have all together, but starting by the brewers of Europe, we have to find, and we are working very hard on that. We are part of the European Forum. The European Forum is a round table, and around the round table there is different people who sit down, enemies of our alcohol, of our beer, friends of our beer. In the middle, there is scientists who said, yes, but that's right, that's wrong. On the other side, there is national members, health specialists, Minister of Health, and those advisor, and the producers of beer, spirits, wine, and cider, and hotel and restaurant organization. And those people around the table have to put commitment. What are we going to do in the next 3 years? For 2010, the brewers have got, for the time being, in 7 countries, a plan to have a full, complete set of decisions that are going to help the people to respect the code of conduct. Very severe. That's in 7 countries. We need them in all our countries. And we've got up to 2010 to do that. In some other countries, their commitment is to work on the issue drinking if you are pregnant. Or I should say not drinking if you are pregnant. In some of the countries, in drink and driving. Very often, on Friday afternoon, Saturday evening, people go out, they come back drunk, they kill themselves, they kill or they hurt other people. That should not be acceptable anymore. Those famous Belgium Bob campaign are something which is very important. That means be reasonable. If you go out with friends, normally you don't go out by yourself. Get somebody who is not going, you trust him, he's not going to drive. Next time, it's you who's not going to drink, you see. And those kind of things, I think we should, in the next years to come, be more proactive about our commitment. And the commitment are going to be public. They're going to be published on the European Union website. Questions are going to be asked. Journalists are going to be asked. Consumers are going to be invited to share the idea. It's going to be, it's a serious issue, because so far we've been doing, I said at European level, 300 initiatives paid directly or indirectly by the brewers on education, on how to help the people who want to drink too much, on drink and driving, pregnant, all those issues. 300. But that was our own action that we were controlling ourselves. I think this time it gets out of our control. It goes into the wider public, and then we have to show that we are credible. And if we are not credible, we have to accept that some of the government are going to put some legislation, which is not by far the best solution, but it will be our fault. Most of the European politicians, civil servants, have no idea what is an industry, what is a business. In the United States, most of the politicians, 49% when I was in the United States, in Washington, have got, of the members of the Senate, have got an experience in business. Here, there is less than 7%. You see? Then, if there is bad legislation, it is not the fault of those civil servants or politicians, it's our fault. We have to go, we have to explain gently, in a way which is right, without hiding corners, but try to explain what is industry, how do we work. I mean, if in Europe there is 2.6 million jobs, directly, indirectly, produced or given by the beer production, it's very important. But that's one side. If we are paying a lot of revenue, nearly 50 billion euros revenue from the taxation on beer, VAT and direct taxation goes into the pocket of the national government, member of the European Union. All that is a good thing, but see, if at the end of the day a great number of people are killed or hurt because they don't drink our beer properly, we have a shared responsibility, and we have to take it seriously. And that's the challenge for certainly the next 4 or 5 years.
The obvious follow-up from that is to ask how you can manage so many different member states, all with different laws, traditions and customs. Do you make it a European issue that you push locally, or what happens there?
I think your question is absolutely the right question. I think Europe is not one single Europe. There is a difference between the culture in Finland compared to Poland, compared to Portugal. There is a lot of cultures, a lot of tradition concerning the alcohol anyway, the way they drink and beer, which is completely different. And 2 years ago, the European Commission wanted to look at a proposal, a system that was coming from the Nordic countries. And the system in Nordic country, no advertising, a ban on advertising, a ban on distribution, they've got a monopoly system to distribute, and very high taxation. And if we look at the result of people who drink not in a reasonable way in those countries, it's the worst countries in Europe. Then maybe there are things that should be learned from the Nordic country coming from the south, and maybe something coming from the north can be learned in the southern countries. But each country, even local part of some of the countries, have got different habits of drinking. I mean, in Belgium, we eat and drink with beer. In France, we eat and drink wine with your meal. It's part of the tradition. In some of the country, they drink before going out to be more comfortable, those kind of things. In southern countries, the tradition by the family is to explain how to drink in moderation. It's not any excitement, you do gradually. But in some of the countries, you are stopped to drink any drink before 25, 21 years old, and then we start, here you are, kind of freedom. Then it's, there is different cultures. But at the end of the day, what is important is the end product, to try to diminish as much as possible the harmful drinkers.
So if you're stranded on a desert island, what would be your best beer?
The best beer, I've got over 60 years, and really the best beer I have a taste is most of the time the one I will taste after this one. Yes, I'm discovering new beer. Each time, yesterday I've got it here. As I told you, I was in Cyprus. They gave us a beer for the new event that was great. It's absolutely delicious. I'm going to show after this. It's living with hope, because the hope is only future, you see. And the one after that means that still be alive, strong enough to get a good beer after the one I want.
So on that philosophical note, is there anything else you'd like to add at this point?
Yes, I'd like you. You are a journalist and you are a friend, and I may ask you directly what I would like from you is that you are supportive of our message of moderation, drink in moderation. And every brewer's accepted it. I know their life, their business, their survive is to sell their beer. But I think we can sell our beer. We should sell our beer with those people in the way which is a good way to enjoy our life. Quest of quality of life. I'm happy, I'm relaxed, I drink my beer, and beer is good. Those people who drink beer because they've got other things to hide should be said, no, there is other way to be to get an orientation to your life than to drink in moderation. And that's certainly, I would say, to the same with the mother or father. You have got a responsibility of education your kids. Don't wait. Don't hesitate to tell them, no. If you drink, drink in moderation at the age which is the permitted age, and do it relax, but in moderation. It's the same to our journalists. The media have got a very important role. It's to say the story as they are, in full freedom, but also maybe to give them advice. Nobody wants to see a society who has been drinking. It's the headlines of every newspapers every day. It's not the way to present the media.
And there we say, thank you for being on the Beer Crate.
Thank you very much. It's always a great excitement to talk with somebody who knows something about beer. And I know for quite a long time that you know about beer, and it's always nice to get an interview with somebody who knows every corner of it.
Quick tastings. In this section, we give a brief yet discriminating summary of a number of different beers from around the world. All have been personally tasted and graded. Naturally, everyone has different tastes, and these are mine, so your mileage may vary. Krumhoff from Thomas Watkins and Hearns. This is a 5% summer ale, with the Welsh name meaning simply summer beer. Outside of Wales, this is called either Evans Summer Ale or Summertime. Colour-wise, it's a ruby amber with a moderate foam head and tastes of caramel with a sparkling CO2 mouthfeel. There is a biscuit aftertaste, which is good, but a slight rubbery aroma that wasn't. That might just have been mine, though, so I'll give it the benefit of the doubt and award it 7 out of 10. Otley Garden, from Otley Brewing. The key word here is honey, since honey touches you throughout the beer, in the mouthfeel, the taste, and the follow-through. Despite this, it's relatively light beer, with a delicate CO2 and a murky but pleasant visual appeal. Since the Otley Brewery is known by the letter O throughout their marketing, the Otley Garden beer is sometimes known as O Garden. Blame them for the 5.4% alcohol, some random stranger for the O Garden reference, and me for the 8 out of 10. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. This is a bottle-conditioned 5.6% beer with a truly golden colour. While it has the look of honey, the taste contradicts this and is slightly apricot and or possibly peach. While it's a pleasant drinker, it doesn't add much to the pale ale genre, but is a decent beer, so I'll give it 6 out of 10. Three Feathers from the Great Orme Brewery. This is another Welsh beer and has a good mix of bitter and sweet, although it's never too much. It does have a slight cream texture to it, but the taste is light, as is the mouthfeel. The official website claims it's not a session ale, but I'm not so sure, and I'd have no objection to testing that claim. It's 5% and 8 out of 10. Try before you die. In this section of the show, we will cast a discerning eye over the best beers that this world has to offer. We shall mention its history, the brewery behind the beer, and why we feel this is a superior brew worthy of your attention. This week, Duchess de Bourgogne, from Brewery Verhaeghe. Duchess is named for Mary of Burgundy, the only daughter of Charles the Bold, born in Brussels in 1457, who died in a horse-riding accident. Duchess is a traditionally Flemish red-brown ale, with the sour and fruity flavours of a Goyes beer, where the old and new fermented stock are combined into a single brew. This particular beer uses both passion fruit and chocolate in the basic structure and matured for 18 months in oak barrels, before being mixed with an 8-month variant, giving it a sweet fruitiness with low bitterness and sour finish. Unsurprisingly, it won a gold medal at the 2006 World Beer Championships. As a brewery, Brewery Verhaeghe began life in 1892, where the Verhaeghe half-brothers, Paul and Adolf, used the barley from their local fields and water from the area. This focus on local business continued, and the brewery developed until the outbreak of the First World War, when the brewery buildings were destroyed when Paul refused to brew beer for the occupying German forces. Despite this, the brewery remained in family hands, passing to Paul's two sons, Victor and Leon, in 1937, although in the following years it was reduced to producing low-alcohol beer of around 0.8%, since during the Second World War there was a lack of barley in the area. But despite this history of the brewery, it wasn't until 1958 that Viken Nahr, the first of their trademark red-brown beers, was seen at an international session in Ghent. This ultimately led to the evolution into the beer we now know as Duchess. Okay, that wraps it up for this week. To give us a tasting of your opinions, you can email us on thebeercrate@gmail.com. If you prefix the subject line with two colons, you can be sure to avoid the spam filters. Remember to enjoy everything from the Beer Crate safely and responsibly, so you can be back here with us next week. Until then, cheers. Has been released under the Creative Commons Attribution, No Commercial, No Derivatives version. See www.thebeercrate.com for details.